Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thank you, as always, for tuning in as we continue our deep dive into the old Monster Box baseball cards from the 1980s and early 90s. And we're back to normal here. We had Brad Blutgen promoting his book, Wax Pack Book, last week, last Friday. We had a little conversation about Jose Fernandez's death on Tuesday. And today we're all about the cards and your comments as we are looking at the 1987 Fleer set, a beauty of a set, another great product for collectors in 1987, and our random pull, the extremely effective, efficient, and somewhat goofy-looking Kent Tekulve Fleer number 190 from the 87 set, looking a little odd in the Philadelphia Phillies uni as he was best known for his days in Pittsburgh. Prior to that, we'll talk about Kent Tekulve and his career, what he's done since then, since his playing days, and also talk about the beautiful 87 Fleer set in just a moment. But let's get to our Twitter feed and get to talking about what you're talking about. Wax and Gum Stains is our Twitter feed. You are more than welcome to chime in at any time of day, day of the week. Your thoughts about our podcast, any questions you may have, thoughts about the hobby as well. And as always, I encourage you to share our Twitter handle at Wax and Gum Stains with your collecting friends or maybe friends who used to collect, as we're having a lot of fun talking about the older baseball cards, the cards that most of us grew up with. And maybe they're not as valuable as they once were, or we thought they once were, but they're still great to collect and great to talk about. And of course, share with your friends that our podcast comes your way on Tuesdays and Fridays, courtesy of Audio Boom. All right, we've got some comments about our previous podcast on the 87 Donruss set, another favorite of mine. All three sets from 87 were great. But Donruss, again, going with that sharp look and the very similar look to the 1985 set. Ben Adams chiming in, I always thought there was a quote-unquote old to quote-unquote new feel from 87 to 88 Donruss card design. I agree with you, Ben, as the 87 design, while it was sharp and certainly modern for 1987, it had a very simple classic look, while the 88 Donruss set, which is unfortunately panned because there's so many of them and the value of the cards has never really risen above a reasonable level. You know, there's just so many of them out there in the world. But the 88 Donruss design I've always liked. I always thought it was a very neat design, kind of a kaleidoscope design. We'll talk a little more about that in a few podcasts when we get to 88 Donruss. But I do agree with you. You definitely had a classic, I wouldn't say an old-time baseball look, but a very simple look to the card in 87, while you had something a little more futuristic looking in 88. I agree with you 100%. Also hearing from Brian World Champ is his handle. We tweeted out a picture at the beginning, or maybe the day before, of several of these wax packs lined up, 87 Donruss wax packs. And Brian says, I love the design and color of these packs. And I do too, Brian. I'm sure a lot of other collectors do. And it dawned on me as I'm looking at this rather hypnotic selection of wax packs just lined up one right next to the other. There's about 30 of them. And I pulled this picture off of probably an eBay or something, somebody who was selling a lot of these packs. And even though it is rather hypnotic and mesmerizing to look at, it is a thing of beauty. The kind of golden brown color for the overall wrapper, you have that cartoonish baseball with the cartoonish word baseball written on top of it. And very similar, you know, 87 Fleer, it's the same thing. We sent out a tweet before the podcast went out. Same thing, just a whole bunch of packs lined up one next to the other. And you have the powder blue, rather appropriate considering the 87 Fleer set had that powder blue look to it. You know, baseball in big, bold yellow letters. And of course, logo stickers, trading cards. I loved the Fleer logo stickers. Still have a bunch of them just sitting in a box somewhere. But very simple there. And of course, 87 Tops going with the traditional Tops look on the wrapper back then, the one that they had pretty much had ever since 1980 with a few tweaks to it. But, you know, as I'm looking at all of these wrappers, it dawned on me, I thought, these are actually some pretty decent works of art. I mean, there's a commercial marketing mentality to it. There's a reason why they selected this color. There's a reason why they selected, you know, this typeface and this particular design. And I don't have the time to do it now. Maybe I'll put it on my bucket list, or I'll let somebody else do it. But you could very easily do a podcast. Wouldn't be right because this is more of a visual medium. I mean, you could do a podcast, but certainly a website. Just looking at baseball card wrappers from now back to the 1950s, because I think some of the baseball card art that you saw in the 1950s with Topps and Bowman was pretty spectacular. In fact, our redesign on our Twitter page and Audio Boom page, you know, it features a nice little workup of the 54 Topps, I believe it was, wrapper design, and it was done up rather nicely by a graphic artist that we know and who's helped us make a look a little more professional. That, of course, would be Andrew Wright. And again, we've got him in our Twitter feed as well. Andrew_R_Wright. He did the graphic work for us. But, you know, I was inspired by that old Topps wrapper, which has been also redesigned as a metal sign. I'm tempted to buy some of these metal signs. They took some of the 1950s wrapper designs and turned them into metal signs. I mean, they're works of art. And you look at the wrappers from the 60s and 70s with Topps, a lot of them were really cool. Apparently, Topps thought so, too, because they wrapped their heritage cards in the exact same wrapper. So, for example, a 1968 will be the next Topps heritage design. So you'll see it in a 1968-style wrapper, which I think is very, very cool. But you could easily put together a website or a book or both, just detailing the details of the wrappers of baseball cards. And I think it would be a pretty interesting read. Certainly a coffee table book. You could turn it into something as simple as that. And I never understood why, and I've seen this on eBay, I've never understood why people would buy old wrappers. You see it all the time. Here's a collection of 1975 Topps wrappers. So why am I going to pay $100 for somebody else's garbage, basically? Now, I do know one reason why. Unfortunately, there are some people in the hobby who take advantage, take these old wrappers, repackage some old common cards from that year, seal it shut, and then sell it as an unopened pack. So there's a devious reason as to why somebody would buy these. But even though they're works of art, I just don't see why you would want to have a big pile of old wrappers laying around. I used to have a bunch. I used to keep some of the old wrappers from a lot of the 1980s and early 90s boxes that I bought as a kid, but not so much anymore. A couple of comments here from Ken Kinsley, talking about the 87 Donruss set. And not just the set itself, but the packs, too, as he was reminded when he was a kid. My mama used to go to a local wholesaler once a month on payday and buy me a box of these, referring to the 87 Donruss cards. This and 87 Topps first sets I collated. Ken also chiming in, I can always remember the year my uncle got married because I spent the night before opening packs of these. Again, referring to the 87 Donruss set there. Well, I'm glad that you remember your uncle's anniversary date, but there's your uncle. You know, you may want to tell him or send him a pack of 87 Donruss and say, oh, by the way, this is to remind you about your anniversary. And if they're still married, good for them, because they'll be coming up on 30 years this upcoming year. That's if he remembers the date. But Ken, I'm pretty sure you remember the date, even if your uncle doesn't. Now, if you have any comments, questions, thoughts, just memories of collecting back in the day, send them to us. We'll take Twitter questions all the time. I like to answer them once or twice a day. I'll check the feed just to see what's coming down the pike. So again, Wax and Gum Stains is our Twitter handle. Share it with a friend, share it with another collector, and share your thoughts with the entire community here with Wax Ecstatic. And by the way, thanks to everybody who has shared our Twitter feed and also news about our podcast, because we've seen quite a bit of growth since we started back in July. I think it was late July is when I started doing these. And to have it go basically 2 months is phenomenal. I joked around in episode one, which I'll still one day get around to posting on Audio Boom, that a project like this typically lasts 5 weeks. So I've made it past 5 weeks. In fact, I've made it past 10. thanks to you and your friends for listening and for talking about it on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains. All right, let's talk about 87 Fleer. We get past the wrappers and look at another fine product from the fine folks at Fleer. As I've mentioned it before, you know, the 80s, especially the mid-80s, was just a phenomenal period of time for Fleer baseball cards because they were so solid. Starting with the 83 set, and then 84, 85, 86, here in 87. In my opinion, they loosened the necktie a little bit in 88 and 89, but still very sharp, very clean, very businesslike. So I called the 83 Fleer set businesslike. I called 84 Fleer the business with businesslike with a silk tie. 85 Fleer was the businesslike with the sensitive cardigan sweater. 86 was the kind of casual Friday business look here, as we had the polo shirt and khaki look there, you know, kind of the yuppie-ish feel of 1986. 87 is definitely a very lighthearted business look here. This is the company picnic card of the 1980s Fleer set. Yeah, this is going out with a t-shirt. And not too short shorts, which we had plenty of those in the 80s. Unfortunately, pictures of me wearing them as a kid are still in existence. But, you know, going out with the family to the company picnic. Do companies even still do picnics anymore? I don't think that's in the budget anymore. But anyways, you know what I mean. There's still business here, but there's still a lot of fun. Now let's take a look at card number 190, Kent Tekulve. As Tekulve, again, looking a little odd in the Phillies jersey. He had been with the Phillies for a couple of years till this point, but we all remember him in the old Pittsburgh Pirates uniforms, especially the 79 Pirates, the We Are Family, Willie Stargell kind of uniform. But here he is with the Phillies. And what I really like about this design is this was ahead of its time in that Fleer started taking cards and making them, for lack of a better term, a little more 3D. And here's what I mean. Look at this Tekulve card in particular. First, you have the border. And it's a very unique border because at the top, it is a powder blue. But then as you go down the sides, it's graded. All of a sudden, it becomes a light blue. It gets a little pixelated in the middle, and then it goes white. Now, for 1987, this is actually very much ahead of its time. Computers were starting to get better. Graphic design was starting to get better. And this was very experimental, but really neat of Fleer to do this kind of changing of colors along the way and make it look so smooth. So you have the border, very distinctive. At the bottom, a very sharp, defined blue line. Right above that, a thin red line where Fleer is written in small white letters in lower left-hand corner. Lower right-hand corner, my favorite team logo. Slap that on anywhere. It works for me. And then the picture dominates about 90% of the card. But the special effect that I want to point out here, and it's not just with Kent Tekulve's card. You'll see it with other cards in the set. Look at Tekulve's hat. It's kind of poking out at you, isn't it? They designed this card to where certain aspects of the player, be it a hat or a bat or maybe, you know, a pitcher's arm and his delivery, would stand out above the outside frame. So there is a little bit of depth being made by this design. So it's not just a picture of Kent Tekulve, likely at spring training, just kind of looking off to the side of the camera, but he's kind of coming out at you. And that is really, really cool. And that is an effect that you see throughout the 87 Fleer set. Now, you would see it with future sets, but really 87 Fleer, to my knowledge, the first set that was really able to do this and make it look nice. You're kind of, you know, in acting, it's called breaking the fourth wall, you know, when the actor looks at the camera or the audience in a live stage performance and talks to the audience. You're kind of doing that here. You're kind of breaking the fourth wall of baseball cards by having, and it's just a tiny, tiny bit of the picture, but just having this little bit of the picture kind of lean out at you. And I think it's a really, really neat effect. So not only is just the overall design and look of the 87 Fleer set nice, but also some of these little subtle effects, the improvement in technology and graphic design by 1987 being used to its advantage to kind of have the players, you know, like I said, lean out at you, kind of, you know, lean towards you a little bit, make them a little more human and a lot less cardboard. Now, if we flip the card over, as you can see in the upper left-hand corner, FLIR, the card number, 190 in this case, player's name at the top, and then you've got the personal information right below it. Now, Kent Tekulve, being a professional ball player for a very long time, his career stretching back to 1971. You got a whole litany of stats here all the way down to the bottom. But you also have a very neat feature that FLIR started including in 87. Now, it would change year from year. But what they would do is they would basically give you a scouting report of the pitcher's pitches, you know, what kind of stuff he could throw, and the hitter's sweet spots, you know, where in the strike zone could a hitter really dominate. And in 87 FLIR, you not only had the strike zones for the hitters, but you've got here, it says he's got the stuff, and it's showing you the type of pitches or the quality of pitches that Kent Tekulve had. And he still had some pretty good pitches in 1987. And I thought that this is a very unique way of humanizing the stats a little bit. And you know, we use now graphics, we use, you know, picture graphs, it's so easy to tell a story, especially on social media. It's a lot easier to tell a story now of somebody's career or how somebody plays in a sport by using just a few bar charts and a couple of graphs and, you know, maybe some unique little graphic just to kind of tell the story. So you're doing it with pictures and not words. Well, in 1987, FLIR was doing it right here. And I thought it was a very fun way of communicating those stats to people. The overall back of the card is also very easy to read, very pleasantly designed, you know, Company Picnic again. And what's more Company Picnic than red, white, and blue? You see that all throughout the back of the 87 FLIR set. Upper quarter of the card before you get to the stats, a solid blue with white text. You have a red and white alternating vertical stripe background with blue text. And then at the bottom in red, white, and blue, depending on the chart that's there, that graphic that I was telling you about. So a very fun way at looking at baseball, you know, again, giving a little life to the numbers in the front of the card, giving a little life to the players by using some of that 3D technology, if you will, and just a beautiful set, the 87 FLIR set. Now, much like every other set in 1987, that's when overproduction started happening, and FLIR was pretty good about not overproducing things. They did ramp things up a little bit in 87, not quite to the extent of Topps or Donruss at this point in time, but FLIR bought in as the rest of the hobby was going bonkers. Well, they started to as well. So if you're looking for value, again, in terms of buying cards, sitting on them for 30 years and trying to make a mint off of them, well, guess what? That's not going to happen, because people have bought 87 FLIR for almost 30 years, sat on it, and they're not making a whole ton of money off of it. But there is some star power here. You've got the rookie cards of Barry Bonds, also Barry Larkin, Will Clark, Bo Jackson, a couple other semi-stars, Wally Joyner, John Kruk as well. So you've got some rookie power. As with all the other sets by 1987, the star power of the younger stars who started their career in the early to mid-80s, also the more veteran stars whose career started in the 1970s. And this is a very affordable set, very much like Donruss. You can buy complete sets for, depending on where you get them, anywhere from $30 to $40 for complete sets, factory sealed sets, I should say. You could still get boxes for $20 to $30. And you can also buy pack lots. Basically, you can get a pack for $1 a piece. There's just enough out there not to saturate the market like much of the cards in 1987 did, but certainly keep the availability of the product out there. There's plenty of 87 FLIR. So just like 87 Donruss, I'll say if you're looking for a very nice looking set with some good star power that's affordable, that's relatively easy to find, it's not going to break the bank. I mean, you may have to, depending on how you collect it, you know, if you buy a box and then supplement the remaining cards to fill out the 660 card set, it may cost you $30 or $40 to do it, but it's a really, really nice set. And like I said, especially the design and the advances in the graphic design technology, then 87 FLIR is a set that you should probably look into buying, because, again, you've got the star power there, but it won't kill your checking account by any stretch of the imagination. Now, as for Kent Tekulve, a Cincinnati, Ohio native, he was a free agent signing with the Pittsburgh Pirates In 1969, he came out of Marietta College in Ohio, and he started in 1969 with the Pirates and would stay with them through the early parts of the 1985 season. Now, as I mentioned, he was a big part of the Pirates in their 1979 World Series victory. In that season, he was 10-8 with them, 2.75 earned run average, appeared in 94 games, led the National League in that category, had 31 saves on the season, and was also in the running for the Cy Young Award. In fact, second consecutive season, 79 was, where he was a top five vote getter for Cy Young Award. Believe it or not, in Kent Tecove's career, he was an all-star only once. And that's hard to fathom. 1980, and I think this goes to show the difference of pitcher usage from the late 70s and early 80s to today. You know, again, today you rarely see a starter get past the sixth inning because you have that one guy for the seventh, the one guy for the eighth, the one guy for the ninth, and then you have three more pitchers in the bullpen, one guy for lefties, one guy's for, righties who hit over 250 on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, the other guy for lefties who hit under 250 on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There's such specialization that a guy like Kent Tecove often gets overlooked. The role of the relief pitcher really became scientific, if you will, starting in the late 60s. Of course, they started, officially counting the save as a statistic, I believe it was in 1969. So the role of the reliever was still evolving as Kent Tecove's career started evolving. And his career started in the major leagues in May of 1974 and would go on through 1989. So he was a guy who kind of rode that wave as people were discovering what relief pitchers could do. Kent Tecove was right in there with them. And it's unfortunate because he kind of gets overlooked. He was a pretty solid pitcher. Now, is he one of these guys who has 400 career saves? No. In fact, he had 184 in his career. But in a 16-year career, Kent Tecove appeared in 1,050 games. He started zero of those 1,050 games. So this guy was a relief pitcher extraordinaire. Not always a closer, not always brought into situations where he would get a save, but he was in there 1,050 times. That is amazing. He would average 68 games a season, or 68 appearances in a season. So almost, not quite a third of the season, but almost a third of the season, you could count Kent Tecove as being a part of it. And that's one reason why the Pirates were such a sensational team in the late 70s and going into the early 80s. Now, they decided to blow things up in the mid-80s, and he was part of that. In fact, right after the 1985 season got started, Tecove was traded to the Philadelphia Phillies for Al Holland. That's right, Al Holland, for this phenomenal relief pitcher, Kent Tecove. It happened on April 20th, 1985. To make matters worse for Pirates fans, Al Holland was traded to, I think, the Angels in just a few months, I think in August of 85. So what you got back for Kent Tecove didn't really match what you gave up. And Tecove would continue to be a very successful pitcher with the Phillies. In fact, in 1987, he led the league in appearances again with 90 games at a 3.09 earned run average, a 6-4 record. Again, pretty solid, consistent, would continue to do so up until 1989. He would sign with the Reds, his hometown team, as a free agent. Was starting to show his age, though, however, as he turned 42 in 1989. Didn't quite have as much luck on the pitcher's mound, certainly statistically. He did finish out the 89 season with the Reds, but couldn't be a part of the club when they would go on to win the World Series in 1990. In 89, 37 games, 5.02 earned run average, and 31 strikeouts to 23 walks. His career strikeout-to-walk ratio, not quite 2-1, I'd say 1.5-1, 779 to 491. But again, the career numbers, 1,050 games, 2.85 earned run average, win-loss record of 94-90. This was a guy who was very dependable, plain and simple. This was a guy that you could put in, and I would say 9 times out of 10, he would shut down the opposition. And that's really all you're looking for, I would think. If you look at his career WAR, wins after replacement, stat, is 26.2. And that's, again, stretched out over 16 seasons. But here's a guy who, you know, it wasn't easy to replace him. This was a guy that you could put in, you could trust, and he would more often than not get the job done. Certainly doing that with Pittsburgh, but even in his later years with Philadelphia and to some extent with Cincinnati in his final season. Now, when Kent Tekulve retired after the 89 season, he did what a lot of players do. You either go to coaching or you go into broadcasting. Well, he went into broadcasting. He was part of the Phillies TV team from 91 to 97. Worked in the Pittsburgh organization as a scout for a little bit, but then started doing color commentary with Root Sports Pittsburgh, and ever since then, he's been involved with the Pirates in some sort, whether it be scouting, whether it be as alumni, obviously doing the occasional broadcasting hit. A very interesting note from Tekulve's personal life: he underwent a successful heart transplant on September 5th, 2014. 4 weeks later, in fact, less than 4 weeks later, October 1st, 2014, he threw out the first pitch at the National League wildcard game between the Pirates and the Giants. Wow. I don't know about you, but, you know, and I'm much younger. I'm 30 years younger than Kent Tekulve. But, you know, if I had to go through a heart transplant 4 weeks later, I'm still on the couch just crying, you know, probably drinking a beer or two, not helping things with my heart. But, you know, you get the picture. I'm not going out to a ball field and throwing the ball around, you know, unless it's doctor's orders. But quite the physical comeback for Kent Tekulve after a pretty major surgery. And, of course, 2014 was the 35th anniversary of the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates, the last team to win the World Series in Pittsburgh. So there you go, Kent Tekulve, quite the relief pitcher, doesn't quite get enough credit. One other thing about Tekulve, you know, he had that sidearm delivery, very unique at the time. You see a lot of other sidearm pitchers now, but when you had that big, wiry Kent Tekulve throwing that thing practically underhanded, that tied up quite a few batters. That was, of course, part of his delivery that really threw players off. While you had some pitchers like a Nolan Ryan who could, just because of his size, could intimidate you, and Roger Clemens would do that too throughout his career. You know, Tekulve didn't have size. He was basically a string bean with glasses. But that very weird, wiry sidearm approach really threw off a lot of pitcher, or a lot of hitters, I should say. So that was a neat little calling card to his career. So Kent Tekulve with quite the career. Again, I think it's a little underrated. That's my own personal opinion. I'm not going to say Hall of Fame worthy, but he was a very consistent, solid pitcher through 16 years in the major leagues. On a beautiful card, the 87 Fleer card, number 190, the Fleer set again. A winner in my book. Affordable. Don't try to sell your house by selling these cards, but you can certainly put together a nice collection with the 87 Fleer set. One other final note about Kent Tekulve and the 87 Fleer set. If you look at the front of this card again, and let's take away all the graphic design technology, let's take away the 3D effect here. One other reason why I love this card: anybody who's listening to this podcast, you have a picture somewhere in a photo album at your house with your dad looking like Kent Tekulve. This is a dad picture. You know, the smoky sunglasses, the sideburns, the big cap, the half dumbfounded look. Everyone has a picture of their dad, probably on vacation, also probably wearing a short sleeve shirt with a farmer's tan. And Tekulve's got that. You look at that, his right arm. Yeah, he's got quite a bit of pale skin before we get down to the elbows here. This is a dad on vacation picture. Everybody's got that. So don't just think underrated but efficient relief pitcher. Think of dad, because you've got a picture of your father that looks just like Kent Tekulve and the 1987 Fleer set. All right, our next podcast coming your way Tuesday. My most iconic set from 1987 Tops, a winner in so many ways. We will discuss that on Tuesday. And I could go an hour on that one, but I won't. I try to keep these around 30 minutes or less. So we're going to talk a lot about 87 Tops in the days leading up to it. In fact, I'll throw the question out now. We'll send it out on Twitter, too. Because most everybody likes 87 Tops, what is your favorite 87 Tops card and why? It could be a photograph. It could be one of the first cards you collected, your favorite player. It could be value. You know, maybe you've got the Barry Bonds rookie card and you still love it to this day. Or, you know, maybe it's just the pose of the player on the card. I don't know. Whatever your favorite, most iconic 87 Tops card is, tell us on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains, and we will share that with everybody on Tuesday. I'm Matt Salmon, your host of Wax Ecstatic. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and we'll see you around next time.